having risen up from that, I feel that much stronger. And I also feel that much more commitment to myself that I'm never going back there again. Like I think that I learned that I did have the strength to pull out of it. And I remember being angry hearing from people, "Oh, this is going to make you stronger." And I remember thinking, "I don't need to be stronger. I am strong."
Mic check, 1 2 1 2. Ladies and gents, I am amped. I am very excited. It is a absolutely stunning day here in Cleveland, Ohio. There is not a single cloud in the sky. It is, I think I mentioned this last week, but we did have a quick cold spell with a little bit of snow in between episodes. But I think I don't want to jinx it, but I think spring is here to stay. As always, we are brought to you by the awesome team over at azoth.com that provides us with the top of the line energy, focus, and mood supplements, Total Nootropic and Total Energy. I am actually hopped up on them a little bit and in a very good way. As I've mentioned in the past, I dabble in a variety of different things besides Uncharted Performance Podcast. I have the privilege and fortune to be a CrossFit coach, Olympic weightlifting coach, be a part of another amazing podcast, and another several different projects that are coming down the pipeline. And energy can sometimes be drained a little bit. Motivation, depending on what time of day, can also take a hit. But with a little help from our friends over at Azoth, from Total Nootropic, and now Total Energy, you can have it all. Really, they are the ultimate productivity boosters and enhancers. Hop over to seekingazoth.com and use the code Uncharted for 10% off either, or I would even suggest both products if you've never tried them. Again, I believe they're actually sold out of the Total Nootropic, because that particular supplement product is arguably, if not the top nootropic on the market. And they are taking pre-orders that will start shipping on May 1st. But you can also get your Total Energy now. So again, use that code Uncharted, all caps, at seekingazoth.com. Also, last season, in season 8, we introduced a new segment that we did during the span of several episodes, which we called Profiles in Uncharted. It was essentially a collaboration with Azoth, with kind of feedback that we got from the amazing team in Prati Tiwari, to feature not only more prominent guests, but individuals that might not necessarily get the voice, the pub, the press that, a CrossFit Games champ might, or an Olympic medalist might, or along those lines, people that have, tens of thousands of followers, Instagram or social media. And we wanted to bring, as again, part of the mission that we had from the start was, there are individuals that need a voice, and we want to provide that voice to them. And this was our way to kind of get back to our roots and really kind of re-baselining, reprioritize who we're featuring, along with our guests that are helping to promote those other individuals as well. So, with that said, this whole episode will be a profile in Uncharted. You will find out briefly why, but and who that is in a second. But what that is, what we're trying to do is, if you or anyone that you know of has overcome insurmountable odds in terms of health, just really bad challenges, come from a dark place, someone like myself that has, you know, battled with substance abuse in the past, alcoholism, you know, we've covered a number of topics on the past, and drug addiction, sexual abuse, body image issues, PTSD, all have been covered on Charted Performance in one way or another, and with the beautiful guests that we have had on the show in the past. But if you know someone that has a story that you believe, you strongly believe should be shared on our show, we would love to have the honor to do that. Be it you, your friend, family member, please hit me up directly at Powell, P-A-W-E-L, at UnchartedPerformance.com, and let me know if it's you, who that is, and what your story is. We are in an extremely privileged position to have the audience that we have grown to have because of you, the listeners and audience, and we want to use that to the best of our ability, to the best of our power. So again, my email is Powell@UnchartedPerformance.com. It is Pawel@UnchartedPerformance.com. All right, guys. Now, with that said, this week's guest, I am very excited because not only because of the type of person she is, but what she is planning to do, which is might be the arguably the most epic. And I do tend to overuse that word, but this is really epic in terms of what she's planning on doing and why she's doing it. This week's guest on episode 92 is Arabelle Mondello. She is a kind, funny, and beautiful human soul, and also a little nuts. This is a very fun episode that deals with a very, very heavy issue. She is an ultra marathon runner, and she is preparing to take on one of the, like I mentioned, the most epic trails on the globe. She is preparing to cover the American Discovery Trail, which stretches across more than 6,800 miles. Again, 6,800 miles in 15 states. The trail is the only coast-to-coast non-motorized recreational trail in the USA, linking communities, cities, parks, and wilderness. So, question that should pop into everybody's mind is, why commit to such an incredible challenge? After suffering multiple miscarriages, she became an emotional mess and dove deep into grief and ensuing depression, losing much of her self-worth. She went on a search for hope and happiness beyond having another baby. On the trails is she where she found peace and a great escape from her suffering. She found that hope that she was looking for out on the trails, in the wilderness, out on the run. She prepares to run across the U.S. to share her message of hope with others and offer guidance to those who have suffered not only pregnancy loss, but as you will hear, to those who might find themselves in the dark or a darker place. And to help us recognize that we individually possess and have the right tools to determine what is truly meaningful, what brings joy to our lives, and the steps we could take to allow us to find that better place. As this is an episode that involves a lot of running, we also do dive into matters of training, race preparation, both mental and physical. The crew, this was actually very, very interesting, that is involved in helping Arabelle get through these amazing races. The actual experience of running such tremendous distances, what she eats and drinks when and during the race, and the very important post-race recovery. With that said, guys, I had a tremendous time with interviewing Arabelle, having this conversation. If you have a moment, and as always, if you find the information valuable and or the conversation entertaining, or both, please share and consider taking a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes. And with that, I am very pleased to introduce to you Arabelle Mondello of Hope on the Run. Enjoy, guys. Arabelle, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks. Thank you for coming on the Uncharted Performance Podcast.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks a lot.
I'm very excited. I understand this is your first podcast. This is exclusive.
Yes.
we like to pride ourselves on exclusives whenever we can get them. So I'm super excited. When we were trying to set this up, you were very kind to email me after our mutual connection through Katie Spots. So quick shout out. Thank you for the connection. Yeah. That you were apologizing for delaying, and I think it was maybe like a day or two after Katie sent the email. And you told me you just got done with a really, really long run.
I did. Yeah.
Like,
it was a little lengthy. Yeah,
a little lengthy. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. And I felt bad a little bit because I was the one that I was delaying. I didn't say anything, obviously, but I was like, all right. But I think that's an extremely valid excuse after just completing. It was 100 miles, right?
Yes, 100 miles.
All right. Yeah. So let's take it from there.
Okay.
Why 100 miles?
I mean, my first response is why not? You know,
it's
it's out there. It's out there. Somebody's got to do it. I don't know. It's a distance that I've kind of had my eye on for a long time. It's been a long road to get there. I registered for my first 100 miler about 9 or 10 years ago and injured and didn't even make it to the starting line. And then, you know, through the course of life, I just didn't get back to it until this last year. And, I really, really sort of had this idea that like eventually I would get there, but as I repeatedly DNF'd, as I repeatedly didn't finish 100 milers, I was kind of starting to feel like, okay, maybe this isn't going to happen, but I'm stubborn, so I wasn't willing to give up. This was my third attempt, like actually showing up at the starting line. Mm-hmm. I have given a lot of race directors a lot of money registering for races that I ended up injured during training and didn't make it to, or, you know, whatever happened that I couldn't toe the line on the day of the race. So this was my third attempt, and I'm pretty happy with it. It was a really, really amazing experience. So I'm happy that I finally have that accomplishment and that buckle, and I'm ready to go out and do it again. So
congrats.
Thank you.
First and foremost.
Thanks.
When you say amazing experience, what do you mean?
I mean, it was clearly the most difficult thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that coming from a woman who like has given birth to 4 children, I really think that running 100 miles is up there. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the last 5 miles of a 100 miler are probably the most horrible thing anyone could experience, unless like you're running 120 miles and then it would be like the last 5 miles of that. I don't know. but it was rough. And, you know, when people talk about, oh, when you get to mile 90, whatever, and you know that you've got it, like, you know that you're going to make it to the finish. It's just a matter of finishing. Like, I never got to that point. I knew that there was a climb up the trailhead to the finish line. And like, so that was going to show up at like 99.8 miles. And in my mind, because of course it's rational when you've been running for 27 hours, like I was aware that there was a possibility I could die on that last hill and just not make it to the finish line. So there was never a moment where I felt like, oh, I've got this, like I got it in the bag, this is mine. Like there was always that thought of, anything can happen. And then of course, you know, the irrational thoughts come in and you're like, yeah, you know, I might not even be breathing by the time I get to the finish line. So it was real intense, like to get to that finish. And especially because it's been so many attempts and so many years. So it felt really great. And to come in with so much time to spare, I would have been happy with like 29 hours, 59 minutes and 59 seconds. It was a 30-hour cutoff. So
okay.
I felt pretty good having almost 3 hours to spare. I felt good about it. So
what got you through those last few miles?
I had an amazing crew for this race. They were absolutely spectacular. I kind of, I spent a little while picking them all out over the course of, like, I had something in mind. I knew that I needed people on my crew who I would never dare quit in front of. So I chose three really amazing men who all three of them brought something really incredible to the scene, like their experience and their knowledge and like their no bullshit attitude. Like it was really, really helpful. I've had a lot of problems with nutrition in the past. That's, you know, when I get about 12 hours into running, I get some pretty bad nausea. I have a really hard time continuing, and usually that's what shuts me down. So one of the guys on my crew, Joe Randini, he's an ultra runner. He does a lot of coaching, mainly with newer runners, but he has a lot of nutrition knowledge and just a real strong foundation in that, and worked really, really hard with me during the last three attempts. So he actually came to this race to crew and like made sure that I followed the plan. So that was really helpful. I had another guy on my crew, Byron Backer, who has run, he's done a couple fun runs at the Barkley marathons. But you know, I don't know if you're familiar with that race, but it's no joke. Mm-hmm. And you know, someone who's attempted that five times, like you don't look at someone like that and say, you know what, I'm kind of tired. Like, like that's not the person that you wuss out in front of. So he paced me for 18 miles.
Okay.
And then my final crew member, Rich Higgins, just an amazing, accomplished ultra runner. He's run a sub 24 hour 100 miler. He's run countless ultra marathons and just knows what it takes. I mean, he ran the last 9 miles of it with me, paced me. And, you know, there was, like I said, just no bullshit. Like, he's like, you know what? Like, you need to get up now and get going. Like, there's no like, oh, or how do you feel? Are you doing okay? It's like, you know, if I said, this is what I'm feeling. Yeah. You know what? That's normal. Keep running. So it was just really helpful to have a crew that was so strong. Mm-hmm. And so determined. And, you know, in those last miles, I mean, the sun had come up. I was seeing things in the trees and, you know, pointing out left and right. There's Batman and there's this and that. You know, it's like things get a little out of hand.
Okay.
And, you know, and like to have someone running along behind me and saying, you know what, yeah, I see that. Just keep going. You know, and like we did come across a horse at one point, and I remember looking over and seeing this horse by a riverbank and like shaking my head thinking, oh, now I've really lost it. And I'm just staying quiet about it. And then Rich says, wow, look at that horse. I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I really thought I was like hallucinating at that point. So it was really a great experience. Like, I know that I hated a lot of the last 5 miles. Like, it hurts. I mean, you know, your body's done at that point. But it's kind of like all that goes away when you cross the finish line. It's like, I did this. Like, I don't have to do it anymore. I can sit down now. Like, it's all good. And yeah. And I remember walking to the car and just saying to my crew, wow, this feels so much better than a DNF. Like, it just feels so good to be walking away with like the award and the mug in my hand and know that I can wear the t-shirt and like feel good about it. So yeah, it was a great experience.
That's awesome. It's an incredible story. And one thing that I never thought of is the whole concept of having a crew and a team for somebody that's running such a long distance. So that's very insightful in how they kind of push you and help you get through it. I want to spend more time on the prep and the after.
Okay.
But I want to get into some other things, and I think we'll naturally come back to it. Because I want to understand how you actually got into this insane business of of running such long distances. So if you could just educate me and the listeners on where you're from and kind of what your athletic background is, and then what got you to start running.
Okay. So I'm from Ohio. I'm from Marblehead, Ohio, a little town out in the peninsula. And, My athletic background is just about zero. I faked illness a lot on gym day growing up. I didn't own exercise clothes, running shoes, nothing. Like, I wanted no part of any of that. I really was uncoordinated and just not an athletic person. And much to my father's chagrin, he was a basketball player in high school and really, really wanted athletic kids, and neither my brother nor I were interested. So I went away to Europe to go to school, in high school, and took up smoking. So I pretty much smoked like it was my job for a long time. I'd quit when I had kids, but then they'd get to be 6 months old and I would start sneaking outside again to smoke. I got divorced when my youngest was two, so he's 18 now. And I have four kids. I was a single mom. I was working full time. Sometimes I push myself a little too much. I went back to school full time, and I don't know. I had just this sort of catharsis at one point. Like, everything kind of came together, like in a stressful way, at New Year's about 14 years ago, and I just decided something has to give, and I quit smoking. And I went out the next day, and I joined a gym. And it took about 3 months for me to be able to run. I would walk on a treadmill, and then in March I started running on a treadmill. In November of that year, I ran my first marathon. I would run into my ex-husband at the gym on a treadmill, and he'd look at me like, do you need a map? Are you lost? Like, why are you, who are you? So yeah, I just, I really got sucked in. It was kind of my lifeline. I mean, I would get up at 3 in the morning to go running while the teenagers were at home with the little kids, and then go on with my day. And I think about a year into my running, I was at a running club. Someone I knew had invited me to their Christmas party, and there was a guy there talking about the Mohican 100 that he was training for. And it was like this light bulb went off. I was like, oh my God, you mean we can go further? Like, and I had done a few marathons at that point, and like, I went home right away and found a 50K to register for, found a 100 miler to register for. Like, I was just so excited about all of it. And and then I just had a lot of injuries. I mean, I was really kind of going rogue with it. Like, I had no idea how to run or what to do. I ran on pavement all the time. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna ask, were you coached by anyone, or were you just kind of doing it on your own?
No, I was just doing it. And I think about it now. I mean, I would head out from Lakewood and run, all the way out to Bay Village and back. I'd do like 20-mile runs with a dollar in my pocket in case I needed to stop for a little water. And I think about that now. Like, I can't even imagine going that far on pavement with no food or water. Like, it's just like, and I had so many injuries then. Like, there were so many things going wrong all the time. I didn't understand the concept of cross training. I didn't understand what I was doing in my body by running on the pavement. About 10 years ago, right around the time I registered for Burning River 100 the first time, I started running trails. And that kind of changed everything. That made a huge difference. I'm 47 and I feel like this is so much easier on my body. I mean, my recovery is so much quicker. I feel like it's just easier to be on the trails, and I love being out in the woods. So that's kind of where I'm at. I had taken a break for about 4 years. I did some running here and there, but not a lot. And it was really just this last a year ago in January that I so January 2017 that I decided I was really going to get back into it. So yeah.
So why running and not something else?
yeah, I don't know. I mean, and I ask myself that. I ask myself that in particular, like right around mile 95. I was like, why? Like, what? Like, whose idea was this? Yeah, I mean, there's so much about it, especially now that I'm running on trails. Like, there's so much about being out in the woods alone. I do a lot of running alone. There's so much about being out there all by myself or with my dogs and just finding a sense of peace. Like, it's just removing myself from everything that's going on around me, slowing my brain down and just settling into a rhythm and being part of something bigger than me, like being part of those trails and being part of the scenery out there. It's just a really great way to unwind and relax. It's a great escape, honestly. I mean, I'm sure that there are worse escapes that one could engage in.
No, for sure.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've always been, which ironically enough, because I smoked for so many years, like I've always been pretty health minded. I mean, like through those years, it was always, you know, I based my health mindedness on my nutrition choices. Like I've always been really, really mindful about what I put in my body as far as nutrition goes. And, you know, since I've started running, I really have a new appreciation for food as fuel. And, you know, and those who know me know that, like, I'm pretty particular about what I put in my body. I'm pretty careful about it. And I just feel like I have so much energy, and I want to maintain that for another 40 years if I can. And I think that if we don't use it, we lose it. Like if I don't get up and run every day, a day is going to come where I can't get up and run. And I think that if we continue to use our bodies the way that they're meant, if we continue to exercise and push ourselves and see what we can accomplish, I think that it not only helps us physically to stay in shape and stay healthy, but I think it helps our minds as well. I mean, I think we age in a different way. I look at a lot of others that are my age. I mean, unless they're, you know, my ultra running friends. but I, you know, when I compare myself to, you know, the other women, peers of mine, like I don't think that I'm as tired. I don't think that I've settled into, oh, like now I'm nearing 50 and it's time to stop like going out running in the mud. Like I don't see myself that way. I don't see myself as almost 50. I don't see myself as a grandmother. I know that I wear these labels, but it doesn't register. And I think a lot of that is because of running. And, you know, I also won't discount the endorphins. I mean, like that alone is worth it to get up and go run just to feel good, just to feel happy and be able to handle things a little bit better. I mean, you know, life is full of stress for everyone and we all find different ways to cope with it or not. And I think that running kind of puts things in perspective for you. It helps you to just sort of clear your head and release chemicals in your body that are going to make you feel good. And we all make better choices when we're not stressed and we're not angry and we're not upset or sad. I think that we all function on a higher level when we feel good about ourselves.
Yeah. It's crazy what a physical endeavor done in a relatively healthy way.
You know, I'm not gonna try to defend it and say that running 100 miles yeah. is good for you.
No, but I totally agree, and I get to see that, you know, on a daily basis of where I coach, in terms of, you know, individuals of that might be quote unquote more mature, that but they are pursuing something, you know, of strength training and this physical exercise, that the beauty that it has on not only the body but the mind. So it's awesome that you said that. But to kind of follow that thread, so you start running, but then why the longer distances?
The longer distances. Yeah. You know, I've talked with a lot of friends about this, and you know, I have friends who run, but you know, the common is, yeah, I'll run with you, but not like you run. Like, you know, I'll go for 3 or 4 miles. Yeah. I don't know why you would ever want to do that. And I'm not really sure what that is. I don't know if that's addictive personality and I like to smoke a lot of cigarettes, so now I need to run a lot of miles. I don't know what that, like how that equates there. Like I'm not sure why I like the distance. I like, and I've always done this, I've always pushed myself. I like the idea of attempting something that's maybe outside of my capabilities. Like, I like proving to myself that I really can do something.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So you mentioned you kind of stepped away from it for a few years.
Yes. And, yes, I did.
And you came back in 2017. What is it that brought you back?
What brought me back? Yeah. Well, what brought me back essentially is what made me step away from it. Okay. I remarried about 4.5 years ago, mm-hmm. and my husband didn't have children of his own. He was younger than me, wanted kids. And at the time I was 42, and you know, I'm pretty healthy. I'm very healthy. I'm in great shape. And I thought, you know, like I'd always had an easy time having the four kids that I had. They were pretty grown at that point. And, you know, so obviously it had been years since I had tried to conceive, but I was willing to give it a try. Mm. And we were able to conceive naturally pretty easily. And it just wasn't successful. So after 3 years of repeated miscarriages and being on that roller coaster of getting really excited because we're finally pregnant and then watching the decline and then going through the miscarriage and then trying to recover from that and then trying to get the hopes up again and be strong enough to try again and then starting it all over. Like, it was really, really hard emotionally. It was really hard mentally. It was a mess, to be honest. I mean, it's like a perfect storm when you throw in loss of any type, grief or loss, and then the hormones that go along with getting pregnant multiple times in your 40s. Like, I was a train wreck. I was really a mess for a few years there. And, you know, in that balance of, okay, maybe I'm not too old to have a baby, and maybe I'm not too old to run, but I'm probably too old to run and be pregnant. So I backed off of the running because you're always afraid that I might do too much. I might do too little. So I just didn't run. And then after 3 years, we decided to eliminate my eggs from the equation, because obviously that was the problem. I mean, you know, at that point I was 45 and so were my eggs. So we adopted embryos and went through in vitro process a couple times. And, you know, that was really hard on my body. And finally, at my 46th birthday, right before New Year's of 2017, like, I said, you know, like enough is enough. I can't put myself through this anymore. Mm. I can't, like, my body can't take anymore and my head can't take anymore. And my heart definitely could not take anymore. And there was a sense of relief. There was a sense of relief in saying, okay, like, we're shutting this train down and that's it. Like, there was this sense of, all right, I'm finally free to, like, get on with my life. I felt like I had put everything on hold. I felt like I'd missed out on so much. And I wanted to get back to doing things that would make me feel whole again. And even though it was a relief, there was also this feeling afterwards of, what the hell, like, I just wasted almost 4 years of my life with nothing to show for it, but like all of this grief and depression and sickness and just feeling horrible. And now what? Like, how do I make that worthwhile? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to run. I wanted to start running again. I wanted to do something that was just for me. Like, I felt like I needed to do something to reconnect, because you do, I think as a woman, you know, our primal purpose is to make babies. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how many you've made before, when you start failing at making them, it does something to your sense of self-worth. And if there are other women that listen to this and have gone through miscarriages, I'm sure that they understand. Like, it's not about what you have. It's not about all the things people say, like, oh, be grateful for what you have. Like, it doesn't matter how grateful I am for what I have. That doesn't take away the grief or the feeling of emptiness that comes along with losing multiple babies. Like, you don't look at it that way when you're going through it. So to start running again, like, and it was ugly at first. Like, I would cry while I was running. I hired a personal trainer. That man did not get paid enough to train me. Three times a week, I would cry to him. I'd be crying through every set. Like, and then, you know, little by little, after a few months of that, I really started feeling like, wait a minute, like, I really am glad that I'm doing what I'm doing, because one of the things that I'd repeatedly said to my husband was, there is nothing that I am doing right now in my life that I can say, oh, thank God I don't have a baby or I wouldn't be able to do this. And I felt like I was finally getting to that point where I had visited my parents in Florida, and I was on a running streak. So I was running like every day, and I think I lasted like at 40 something days. And I really wanted to run 10 miles a day every day while I was visiting them for 10 days. And I got to like the fourth or fifth day, and I'm running on the beach, and it felt so good that day that the thought for the first time ever like went through my head, my God, if I had a baby, I wouldn't be doing this right now. And that was sort of the beginning of like realizing that, okay, like I can pull out of this. I really am going to be happy again. I really am going to find something that brings me joy. So
that's a pretty bold statement to make after everything that you've been through. And what I pride myself on, and I think it's part of my ignorance and mostly based on my ignorance, is that, you know, we have these often very difficult conversations on the show, and I'm just kind of rolling with it because I did not have the experience. I'm not a woman. I'm a man. I cannot sympathize in any way. So I apologize if I'm insensitive in any way, especially to the listeners. Cause I know before we got on the air, you're very open about this, but it's incredible what you went through, and you overcame again this grief and this great depression and this idea of self-worth. So for those that are listening, and this is usually the case, that it might not be miscarriage, it might be, you know, something else, some other type of loss, some other addiction. For me, it was alcohol and drugs and whatnot. What did you learn about yourself coming through those multiple years and getting to that place on the beach and making that statement? And maybe some advice to individuals that are going through something right now.
So when I was going through all of it, when we were in the throes of trying to have a baby and repeatedly losing babies, like I really reached an all-time low. I really felt like I wasn't the person that I wanted to be. I was angry. I was angry with the world. I was angry with pregnant women in grocery stores. Like it was a big day if I could like tell myself, you know what, you don't have to run from here screaming and you don't have to ram her with your cart. Like as though it was like a personal affront that pregnant people were walking around and I wasn't. Like it, and I'm not that person. I'm, you know, by profession, I'm a yoga teacher. So I'm all about peace and love and sunshine. And I would show up to teach my classes, and I mean, I have lovely students. I owned a studio. I was very fortunate to have a very successful situation. And all of these loving, supportive students would show up, and everyone would be sitting there with their eyes closed, waiting for me to say something about some words of wisdom to start class. And there were days where I would sit there looking at all of these lovely, trusting people and think, okay, so I wanted to jump off a bridge today, and instead I thought I'd come here and teach you guys about acceptance. Like, I just felt like, who am I? Like, how do you make
that choice? Because that's a pretty intense choice, right? You know,
jumping off a bridge or coming to teach yoga. Yeah. And, you know, the panic attacks before I had to show up and be present and teach and be that person who could offer guidance and offer unconditional love to students. And like, I think that it helped me to step out of myself, because when I teach, I do tend to get absorbed in my students. So that helped me, but I was still leaving there and feeling like I can't do this. I can't keep pouring from an empty cup. And I think it made me more and more resentful It made me resentful of yoga. I mean, yoga is my life. And there was a good stretch in there of probably about 8 to 10 months where I didn't even want to practice. I took several months off teaching completely and had all of my teachers fill in for me. I just felt so drained from it. And the things that I learned about myself, I look back now and I guess that there is a little bit of gratitude, maybe a lot of gratitude, that I know what I'm capable of on that end of the spectrum. I know that I'm capable of a really, really dark, angry side. And I think we all have that in us, and maybe having experienced it and having risen up from that, I feel that much stronger. And I also feel that much more commitment to myself that I'm never going back there again. I think that I learned that I did have the strength to pull out of it. And I remember being angry, hearing from people, oh, this is going to make you stronger. And I remember thinking, I don't need to be stronger. I am strong. Like, I was strong enough before. Why do I need this? And, you know, I think we go through that where we hate the universe. We hate God, if you believe in God. Like, you hate anything that's supposed to be good and loving and supportive, because you just feel let down. And I think that for me, the message that I have, and the message that I have with what I'm doing with all of this, is that we can hit that place. We can find that ugly side of ourselves and be stuck with it and sit in it and roll around in it. And we can still know that there's a way out. We can still know that there is something on the other side. There's something, if we're willing to do the work, if we're willing to commit to ourselves and find a way to take care of ourselves. And, you know, as a yoga teacher, as a yogi myself, like, I do believe that we always have the tools inside of us to take care of ourselves. We just get so cluttered up with all of the shit that's thrown at us in life that we lose sight of it. And sometimes we need something to knock us down and strip it all away so that we can find ourselves again. And for me, I think that that was going through all of this. Like, it put me in a place where I really had to look at what really is meaningful to me in life. Like, what do I really want? What's really important? And I think that we can get to that place, each and every one of us. It doesn't matter if you're in the throes of it now, or if you're on your way down or on your way back up. We just need to remember that we do have the tools within us, and we do have the capacity to pull ourselves out of it. Every one of us. I'm a normal human being. I had a pretty normal life with struggles like anyone else. Like, we all have struggles. Everyone has a story. But I'm not like some superwoman. I'm not a super athlete. I'm not an elite athlete by any stretch of the definition. But I've done things that I never would have thought possible, other than the fact that I thought, well, I'm going to find out if it's possible. And we're all capable of that. Like, you don't have to be someone who's this really amazing person or a superstar in order to be able to rise above things. An ordinary, everyday person like me, a single mom, can pull themselves out of whatever rut and make changes in their life and move on.
Thank you. Thank you for taking a very poorly stated question and making it beautiful.
Thank you.
So there's no easy segue out of these types of questions. But I want us to kind of I do want us to kind of transition back into what got you out of there, right? And it's that running. So after that moment on the beach, when do we get back into long distance?
So it started shortly after that. I decided that I was going to run a 50K. I was going to register for a race. It had been 8 years since I had registered for anything. And I had a lot of fear you know, I had gotten injured a lot. And a lot of times it was like non-running related injuries. I mean, I think the last race I had registered for, I fell down my stairs and broke my pelvis. So like, and I was like, okay, that's where I draw the line. Now I'm done. So, you know, it was a little stressful for me to think about like actually registering and showing up. And I registered for 50K and I bent over wrong 2 days before the race, threw my back out to the extent that, and I've never had back problems, but I did something so horrible on that particular occasion that it like required an ambulance to get me out of my house. And, you know, I spent 10 days lying on my floor on my back and, you know, staring at the ceiling and thinking like, why? Like, I think that I had wrapped everything up in that race and I thought, I'm going to go run this 50K. And at the end of that 31 miles, all of these miscarriages are going to make sense. And all of this failed in vitro and everything I've been through, it's all going to feel like it came full circle. And this is the answer. And then when it didn't happen, it almost felt like a miscarriage all over again. Mm-hmm. I had trained for months and then the day came and it was like, suddenly it was gone. And while I was laying there, you know, I thought so much about it and it occurred to me that it wasn't really about running that race. It was everything that I had done to get to that point where I was even capable of going out and running a race. And I did register for another one. And 2 weeks later I went and I ran it and I finished in 6 hours. So like I did a good job, like I was, it was fine, but it was so monumental that happened then, because during that time of sort of like making peace with it and understanding that the process was what was important. Running that race wasn't solving anything. It was the process of getting there that had pulled me out of this rut I had been in. And I knew that I had a message and I thought, if there's a way that I can make my pain helpful to someone else, then those years are worth it. Then it really wasn't wasted time. And it was at that point that I decided I was going to run across the country. Because that's logical.
Yeah, exactly. what is your medium to provide that, I guess, guidance, support, help to others going through miscarriages? And again, for those listening and for myself, it might not necessarily be a bit miscarriage, but I think the parallels might still be there as well.
Right. I mean, as far as how to support others or how I intend to help others. I mean, for me, I think that like my transcontinental run is, it is pretty focused on reaching out to women who have had miscarriages or early infancy loss. The plan is to run across the country on the American Discovery Trail from Delaware to San Francisco. And I have scheduled stops in cities along the way, cities and towns where I'm doing public speaking and reaching out to women and doing fundraising and trying to create awareness and raise money to provide counseling services for women who don't have access to it, to provide miscarriage specific counseling services.
Got it.
Because it is a traumatic experience, or it can be a very traumatic experience, and there isn't a lot of specific counseling for it. So that's my intention with it. Ultimately, I would love to see what I do spread from there. You know, my organization, Hope on the Run, I'm really hoping that will grow. Like, I don't want this run to be the final goal. I want this run to be the start of it.
Mm-hmm,
like that somehow through that I can create something that will help in the future, that we can create a directory on the website that wherever you are, you can go to hopeontherun.org and look in the directory and find help. So, I mean, and that's down the road, of course. So it starts with this run and reaching out to women and letting people know. And I do feel that this is like across the spectrum. This isn't just miscarriage. This is loss. This is addiction. This is whatever you're struggling with, depression, whatever it is. When we talk about what's wrong, we help make it better. Because if you're struggling with it, likely someone else is struggling with it. And when we struggle with something, it's really easy to get into our heads and think that we're the only one. As human beings, I think we all live with just a little bit of terminal uniqueness, and we think that we're all alone. And the more we talk and put things out there, I think the less traumatic it is for others going through the same thing. And for me, it was a huge step when I put myself out there and published my blog. It was huge to put all of that information out there and say, this is me, this is what I've been through. I mean, I'm not that person that airs my dirty laundry on social media. I'm not like I'm just not that person. So for me to be that open about all of it was tough, but I also knew that I wish there had been someone who had written that blog so that I could have read it when I was going through it. And whatever anyone is going through, if you put it out there and you're willing to talk about it, you're going to find others who appreciate hearing it, and you're going to feel less alone.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I guess, maybe paradox. I don't know if that's the right word, but running long distances, for the most part, and I think you mentioned it, it's a great escape, but you are alone at times. But at the same time, through Hope to Run, Hope on the Run, and undertaking these long distance runs, you are bringing more people together.
Yes.
So it's... Yeah. So it's like a yin and a yang, which I find interesting and very cool at the same time. This is probably the bad joke, but you know, I just thought that you're going to run that whole thing, you know, without stopping, but I guess you are taking breaks.
I am running it essentially without stopping. I mean, yeah. Not like I did the 100 miles, but the goal is 30 to 40 miles a day.
Got it.
And so probably between 6 and 8 months. Okay. Depending on how things go. Yeah.
That's a long run. And that.
Yes.
Second bad joke. That reminds me of a great movie back in the day is when Forrest Gump went on that long run.
Yes. Everyone makes references to it. Makes references.
Sorry. Had to do it.
Yeah. Yes.
How are you preparing for this?
I'm running a lot of races this year, pretty much because I wanted to make sure that I put myself out there to really see how much I'm capable of, like what my recovery time is, like how I manage training, and just to get, like, I travel a lot for races, so I experience different terrains and different weather, just kind of a lot of the prep, I think, is more mental than anything. When you run across the country and I've researched, and I've been in touch with a gentleman who was the first person to run the American Discovery Trail back in the 90s when they first kind of put it together. And, you know, one of the things that he says is, like, it's not necessarily something that you train for, because as you start running, you're going to train. you're going to run 30 or 40 miles a day. You're going to get in shape. Obviously I have a solid base. You know, I try to between races, you know, I mean, I have a recovery time. I have a taper time before the race, but in general, I like to average my average is right under 50 miles a week, but that means that, you know, there are times where I'm running 30 miles a week and there are times where I'm running 80 miles a week. Mm. So, you know, it varies, but I like keeping that base, that solid base. And I think that that part's important. I'm not running any races after December of this year, because I'll leave for the run on May 1st of 2019. And so I won't be doing any more racing. You do run differently when you race. There's a little bit of, it's hard to not be competitive. It's hard to not push yourself harder on a 50K than on a 31 mile training run. Like, you approach it with a different attitude. So you're more apt to get injured racing than training. at least this is my experience. And so I want to take those first few months of 2019 to just maintain my base and continue strength training. I do a lot of cross training. I do some cycling, a lot of cycling, and I do a lot of weight training. So I want to keep that up and just kind of prepare for it. I'm working on a lot of fundraising for it, so that's taking up time, and there's just a lot of prep work that needs to be done. But as far as preparing physically, I feel like the most important thing for me to do is to remain uninjured and to maintain the fitness level that I have right now.
Got it. My question, and this is a selfish question because I love to do this and I get very angry when I don't, is
okay.
When I don't eat. when I don't eat on time. How do you eat on the run? I mean, quote unquote.
Yeah, I mean, I eat a lot. Actually, one of my crew members told me that he's never eaten as much as me during a 100-miler. like, I think my crew was all really, really impressed. I'm not a big girl, I'm kind of small. So, like, you know, for me to put down the amount of food that I do, I think that they were all pretty impressed with me. But that for me, I knew that that was key. When you don't eat, you get sick. I mean, that's pretty much what brings on the nausea when you're running. When you don't get enough calories, you start to get sick. So I knew that I had to just keep pushing the food. And I probably ate more than anyone during that race. I ate every 4 miles. Like, and I ate things like a whole bag of trail mix at a time. I'm not sort of social misfit when it comes to diet. Like I am vegan. I'm vegan by choice, but I can't eat gluten and I am allergic to dairy. So I'm that limited person. So my crew made all of my food for me. And it was things like, grilled vegan cheese on gluten-free bread with mashed avocados, peanut butter, vinegar, kettle chips, and ketchup all smashed into it. And
that sounds delicious.
Oh, it was amazing. I put down probably a half dozen of those. Those were great. I eat a lot, but I eat such a clean diet that I feel like everything that I eat counts. So for me, eating on the run, in the early hours of a race, like the first 10, 12 hours, maybe not even that much, maybe the first 10 hours, I can slow down to a walk and eat. But after that, I have to stop. And for years, you know, I had these visions of like Dean Karnazes running with a pizza in his hand out through Oklahoma or wherever he was. And I was like, I was going to be that dude. And, you know, it just doesn't work. Like my stomach can't handle that. I save far more time by standing still, eating my food, and then taking off running. When I try to eat while I'm running, it takes about 10 minutes and it all comes back up again. So those calories are wasted. And then I lose time trying to stop and get more food in me. So I just stop to eat. And like, I just, for me, that's what works. I don't stop long and I don't sit down unless I absolutely have to. I waited until I needed a shoe change in my race to sit down. And I think it was probably somewhere around 40 miles. But, you know, I try to stay on my feet as much as possible, but I do have to slow it way down to eat.
Fantastic. That's the answer I was hoping for.
Okay. Okay. Good.
So let's take a moment to reflect a little bit. And what do you remember the most so far from your journey?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about this. I have some trails that I really love, and there are some moments that I've had out there where everything just felt good. Mm-hmm. And you know, not every run is great. Like, it doesn't always feel good. Yesterday I ran and it didn't feel good at all. So, you know, some days it's good, some days it's not. But there are days where everything feels good. The weather is right. The trail conditions are right. Your body feels good. You're rested, whatever it is. And there are these like perfect moments where No, I cry frequently when I run, but it's usually with a smile on my face now. Like those tears have changed. There was a time where like I was trying to run away from the pain, and now I find that there are more and more moments where, I see the sun coming through the trees and I feel like my body is so strong, and I just feel overwhelmed with gratitude and happiness. And I feel like those moments have become more and more frequent in the last like 4 or 5 months. I think that that's happened more often. And I will say probably one of the highlights of my life was crossing that finish line to my 100 miler. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Would you have done anything differently?
No.
Okay.
No. No, I wouldn't have. No. I don't have any regrets. I feel like if I hadn't gone through everything I went through, I wouldn't be in the place that I'm in now to help anyone else. Like I needed to experience that in order to have that experience to be able to share with others and help them through their situations.
Got it.
So, yeah.
So speaking of helping others, where can people find you? How can they get in contact with you?
So my website and blog are at hopeontherun.org. I have a donation page on there, and everyone is welcome to donate. Every cent counts. A lot goes into running across the country. I'm working on that. I can be found on Facebook. I have a page on Facebook for Hope on the Run. And I am on Instagram. Incidentally, it's Run Arabelle Run on Instagram. And I can also be found on Facebook, Arabelle Mondello. So.
Awesome. Arabelle, I had an amazing time, and I'm gonna apologize for maybe my not so great questions.
No, I thought it was great. Thank you. Thanks.
And thank you for taking the time to share your story and being so open. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You
Thank
got
you
it.
so much. All right.
And I will talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks.
You got it. Another amazing episode of the Books Fam. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. If you are new to the show, don't be afraid to check out other episodes. And if you dig the content, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you ever have any questions, feedback, or you just want to hit us up, please don't hesitate. Email address is contact@unchartedperformance, or you can hit me up directly at powell@unchartedperformance.com. Facebook and Instagram at Uncharted Performance, and if Twitter is your thing, at Reach Uncharted. And give us a follow and tag us to let us know who and where you are. As always, thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and talk to you next week. Cheers, guys.